Hi, I'm Carol Sliwa, a senior writer for TechTarget's Storage Sites. Joining me today to provide some basic information about erasure coding is Ethan Miller, a professor of computer science at the University of California at Santa Cruz. Professor Miller does research on erasure coding and how to use it in storage systems. He also works one day per week at Pure Storage, which sells enterprise solid-state storage arrays. Professor Miller, can you please provide us with a good working definition of erasure coding?
Sure, I'd be happy to. Erasure coding is a set of algorithms that allow the reconstruction of missing data from a set of original data. So, for example, if I had six pieces of data that I wanted to protect, I could use an erasure coding algorithm to generate two additional pieces, giving me a total of eight. And at least for the types of erasure coding we'll probably be talking about, any of the six pieces will be sufficient to rebuild the missing two. Now, the point of erasure coding is you can pick the number of original data pieces to be as large as you want, essentially. I know of some that go up to 200 and some odd. And you can pick the number of duplicates to be as large as you want also. So I might say that I would have 10 original data pieces and 8 redundant ones, giving me a total of 18, and any 10 would allow me to rebuild the original data. Just about every IT shop uses RAID 5 and RAID 6, which are very commonly used types of erasure coding. Most IT shops don't really have to worry too much about using erasure codes that protect against more than two data losses, at least for now. And the reason is that the chances of two devices that are part of the same group failing simultaneously, that's relatively small. If you run a very large IT shop, let's say a petabyte or more, maybe you do want to think about alternate ways of doing erasure coding that can protect against more than two data losses simultaneously.
Are there different types of erasure coding?
Yes, there are. There are two basic types of which people should be aware. In one type, and something called Reed-Solomon falls into this category, if you had, let's say, 12 data elements and 4 erasure code elements, any 12 elements from that group of 16 would be enough to rebuild the missing ones. Any 12. Doesn't matter which 4 fail, you can always rebuild. There's a second type of erasure codes that are becoming a little more common today, where, again, you might have 12 data elements and 4 erasure code elements. And the erasure code can recover from most failures of 4 elements, but not all failures. Now, of course, this is slightly more risky, so you must be getting something back in return. And what you get back in return is that instead of needing 12 elements to rebuild anything missing, you might need only 3, 4, 5, 6 elements. So you might need to read a lot less to rebuild, but the trade-off is there are some sets of 4 failures that you can't recover from. So when you're looking at a system, try to ensure, if you care about it, that they use something like Reed-Solomon. But if you're looking for performance, maybe this slight chance of 4 failures being loss of data, maybe that's something that is more attractive to you. It's important to be aware of these differences. Depending on your application, you may choose one or the other.
For which applications, workloads, and types of data is erasure coding most appropriate?
One type of data for which it's extremely appropriate is archival data. And this is because for archival data, it's going to be around for a long time, the chance of losing one or even two or more devices goes up dramatically. The second thing about archival data that makes it very amenable to erasure coding is you don't write it very often. You write it once, and then maybe you'll read it later on, maybe you won't. Erasure coding imposes most of its overhead on writes, but doesn't impose very much overhead on reads. In fact, the only overhead on reads is if there's a failure. If there's no failure, erasure codes really don't have an impact on reads, in most cases. For applications, that means that if you have a very active thing where there's lots of reading and writing going on, erasure codes might not be the right choice for you. But if you have applications which are largely read-only, erasure codes can give you very good reliability, resistance to losing data, at relatively little overhead, because the overhead in terms of performance comes at write time.
What distinguishes one product's erasure coding from another product's erasure coding?
That's an excellent question. I think the first thing that distinguishes them is basic performance. In other words, based on their implementation, how fast is it at writing and how fast is it at reading when you're doing recovery? That's one question. Another question is, how do they break up the units across which erasure coding is done? It could be entire disks. It could be volumes. It could be parts of disks or devices. It could be any of those things. Obviously, there's a question of how big the erasure coding word is, you know, 10 data devices and 5 erasure code devices versus 12 and 4. But usually, most products are pretty configurable in that respect. Another difference, which is starting to become an issue, but isn't one necessarily, is multiple types of erasure codes. Most products that are out there use Reed-Solomon coding, and all Reed-Solomon coding works pretty much the same way, modulo how fast your implementation is. But there are other forms of erasure codes where, in order to make things faster to recover, for example, they'll say that instead of being able to recover from all failures of 4 devices, we can recover from 99.9% of failures of 4 devices, but not all of them. Making that small trade-off can make your erasure coding faster, but it does slightly increase your risk. So in situations like that, it's important to understand, can they recover from all 4 device failures or just most of them? And so there are little things like that around the edges of things that will differ between different companies' implementations. So it's important to try and get a little bit more background on how an erasure code works and what kinds of failures you can recover from in deciding what's the difference between one product's erasure coding and another.
Do you think erasure coding is the wave of the future?
I think that for some things, erasure coding is the wave of the future. Certainly for archival storage, erasure coding, in my opinion, is an absolute must, because if you're going to store data for 10 or 20 years, you're going to want to survive a lot more failures. And again, for long-term archival storage, you're almost always reading it. As we said before, the only performance overhead is on writing. So for archival storage, erasure coding is absolutely the wave of the future. I think there's no question about that. For other things, I think the question of whether erasure coding will become the wave of the future depends on the relative speed difference between the capacity of a device and how long it takes to read or write it. The bigger devices get relative to the speed at which you read and write them, the more erasure coding matters. And that's why we've gone from RAID 5 back in the mid-90s when I was part of the RAID group at UC Berkeley to RAID 6 today. It's because back when I was starting, it took you literally a few minutes to read an entire hard drive. Now it can take you the better part of a day. If it goes to a week to read your media at maximum speed, you might need even better erasure codes, because in the time you spend to rebuild it, a week, you might have 2 or 3 failures. You want to be able to recover from those. So I think that as our storage devices get bigger and not necessarily faster at the same rate, we're going to need erasure coding more and more.
Thanks, Professor Miller. That concludes our podcast. We hope you check out the additional parts of our guide on erasure coding.